Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast along with Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. It's about midnight here, Central Time. We're back from Rosenblatt Stadium as we record this one. And kind of a very strange ending to the fourth day of the Cobbled Series with a game suspended after five innings with Clemson leading Oklahoma 6-1. So one bracket has played, all four teams have played two games. Another bracket, two teams have played two games and two teams are playing again. Just Oklahoma's had both its games interrupted by rain, and Clemson, of course, had an entire game washed out and pushed back a day by rain. So Aaron, in one bracket we have things going really kind of according to plan as far as one team seizing control, that team being UCLA. But the other bracket's completely scrambled. Let's focus on the one where we have some clarity. And the Florida State, UCLA, TCU bracket. First off, UCLA, obviously the story so far, the Bruins pitching. We knew the Bruins had tremendous pitching, but Gerrit Cole and Trevor Bauer combining for 24 strikeouts in their 15 innings of work as starting pitchers. That's really an open and shut case for the Bruins, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, they've been the best team here. They've simply dominated on the mound. But, you know, we knew they were capable of dominating on the mound. We didn't know which Bauer and Cole would show up, frankly, because even last week, you know, they won that Super Regional, but it wasn't because Bauer and Cole went to Fullerton and shut those guys down.
Right.
Those guys were hittable, and they gave up some runs. They were much better this week in Omaha.
24 strikeouts in 15 innings. Just saying that out loud sounds impressive.
It's very, very impressive. I mean, what Gerrit Cole did, I mean, I thought what Trevor Bauer did was just outstanding, and I didn't think anyone was going to top that.
And you're talking about the long toss before the game, not even what he did in the game.
That's right.
What he did in the game was even more impressive, which was hard to do, for me anyway.
Yeah.
And he did it anyway.
But I mean, Cole just shut down, I think, a more dangerous offensive team in TCU.
No doubt.
You know, the composure that he showed after TCU fought back in that seventh inning.
Right.
You know, that was just very impressive to me. That was a question people have always had about Cole.
Yeah.
Is the makeup, the composure, you know.
Mound demeanor.
And boy, he really impressed in that regard. He's really grown up a lot, you can tell.
He really has. He didn't just pitch okay after giving up those runs. He was outstanding. He was tough. He made the difference in the game by himself. And UCLA also has scored some runs. They put up double digits on Florida. They did it to a Florida pitcher, Alex Pantoliotis, who clearly wasn't at his best for whatever reason. He gave a no comment in the post game, but at least he showed up. We'll get to Arizona State later. But Pantoliotis had shoved it against Miami in the Super Regional, Aaron, and UCLA without Tyler Rombatula, that was a big question. Could UCLA score without their best, you know, their three-hole hitter? And it's affected them a little bit on defense. They've had a couple of awkward plays. Their lineup's been good, and then against TCU, Kyle Winkler, very effective.
Right.
You know, you could not ask for more than what he did against Texas, winning at Dish Falk to win a Super Regional final, but the deciding game. But, you know, a couple of home runs for UCLA off Kyle Winkler. How can either TCU or Florida State beat Rob Rasmussen, Bauer, Cole, Claypool, Klein, Goodell, Grace? Is UCLA impregnable on that side of the bracket right now?
They're certainly in the catbird seat. And you know,
catbird reference.
You talked about UCLA's offense, and the thing that struck me watching them these first two games is how much they remind me of Texas last year.
Yeah, good point.
Texas had anemic numbers last year heading into the World Series. Scoring wise, they were in the 200 somewhere in the country.
You're right.
They were well behind every other team in Omaha last year coming in, power wise especially, and they had a power surge. UCLA power numbers were again lagging coming in here.
Yeah.
They had nobody with double digit home runs coming into this thing, and you know they.
They hit their home run leader. One of their two guys with eight home runs, they hit nine holes, Steve Rodriguez.
Right.
I mean, he tied for the lead in home runs, and he's their nine-hole hitter, and he's been good out here offensively.
Right. And you know, the long ball was a part of their attack against TCU. They got one from Jeff Jelilich. They got a big one from Cody Regis. You know, they were just one of those teams that you can tell is playing better now than offensively than they were for most of the season, and they're taking advantage of the dimensions and the way this park plays. It's an offensive park.
Yeah.
just think they're playing well in all facets, and like you said, their pitching is set up. I mean, they're set up right now to win the national title because Rasmussen on tons of rest is going to have an advantage over whichever team comes out of the loser's bracket, and then you've got Cole and Bauer on full rest set up for the championship series, and then Rasmussen if you need again. So they're in great shape.
and Claypool and Klein.
Exactly.
And Goodell. I mean, their depth is incredible. And here's the scary part. Most teams, Aaron, don't have especially teams that have UCLA's caliber of pitching. And we saw this up close and personal for 4 years with North Carolina getting to Omaha. Most teams with that caliber of pitching, especially power arms like UCLA has, get to Omaha and their lineups are thin. They don't have depth in the lineup. UCLA does not have a great lineup, but they are playing without Cody Kiefer, one of their main corner outfielders, an offensive guy, and they're playing without Ramatoula, and yet their offense still looks good out here. That tells you about their recruiting, that tells you about their depth, tells you a little bit, as John Savage never hesitates to do. He credits Rick Vanderhook as assistant coach, who they picked up from Fullerton to be there, to run their offense, and it's been a sea change, and you talked about it several times about how you saw Coach Vanderhook last year when UCLA came to Greenville, North Carolina, and he was frustrated with the team just not grasping it. Maybe the addition of Bo Amaral and an extra year were the things that it really took for UCLA to grasp that offense, because Bo Amaral is exciting. Nico Gallego, those two guys make them go at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, Gallego's matured, and Ramatoula matured this year. You know, those are guys that I think really bought into the Vanderhook system in year two. But then you got those freshmen that Vanderhook brought in, you know, guys like Amaral and Kiefer and Cody Regis, Dean Espy, and Jelish. I mean, that whole group is a really good group. They're just his kind of players, and they're just hard-nosed, athletic guys who, just make things happen.
And they don't give away a ton of the bat. So, obviously, we're impressed with UCLA. It's hard not to be.
That said,
TCU also was impressive in defeat. They were very impressive in defeat.
TCU is the team that could still be a factor here. I don't think Florida State is. I just don't think they have enough pitching.
I think Florida State beating Florida was a pretty significant accomplishment. Yep. Just for Florida State to not come out here and go 2-barbecue, to give Seminole Nation a gift of sending the Gators home. Which, you know, Mike Martin did not admit, but I just thought I had to break out my Mike Martin because, you know, that was a big win for them. Tyler Holt, it was a big win for Tyler Holt, Gainesville High graduate.
Absolutely.
Playing for the Seminoles for 3 years and to make the Gators wear it. They're 4-1 this year against the Gators. It's a pretty good year for Florida State. I do think Florida State's offense is dangerous enough that if Stephen Maxwell doesn't bring his A game, that TCU could be in trouble. TCU, I think, expended a lot of energy in that loss against Garrett Cole. But that said, TCU looks like the better team than Florida State.
Yeah, and the point that Jim Schlossnagel's made a couple of times that I think is important is that, you know, in the Super Regional and in the Regional, where TCU only had to play three games, that didn't showcase one of the biggest strengths of this TCU team, and that is its pitching depth.
That was a great point he made in the presser the other day, no doubt.
And you know, that's going to be on display here if TCU is going to make a run through this, you know, this loser's bracket. I mean, they've got lots of pitching. Maxwell is a really good number three who would be a number one for Florida State.
Yeah, he would.
You know, and if that doesn't work out, they haven't even used Tyler Lockwood yet, their senior righty, who's their closer slash long man.
He's been their Friday guy in the past.
Yeah, in past years he has been. And they've got Greg Holly, and they've got Eric Marshall, and Eric Miller, and Caleb Burr. I mean, they've got lots of arms back there. I just think that they're well positioned still. And they could still give UCLA some trouble, because I still think TCU is a very complete team, and I think they're still dangerous. But that said, UCLA is in the catbird seat, and I think that they're going to probably advance.
It does seem like the one other thing is that Rasmus is not a great matchup for TCU, which is a very right-handed lineup, so you may have to go Bauer again. But I think that's the key. I think John Savage deserves credit. We haven't even written this. I think he took a page out of the book of Mike Gillespie, who never would start, who often in the old six-team regionals would save his number one starter for the third game. Here, he knew he had two aces. He gambled and bet that Trevor Bauer could beat a very good Florida team, which he did. Then he had Cole for the better team, which is TCU. And also that sets up that if there's a rematch with TCU, TCU doesn't see the same pitcher twice. They see Bauer, who's very different from Cole.
It's a great
physically,
point.
Repertoire-wise, a lot of other ways. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. We're going to talk about the other bracket. The other bracket is crazy. It's been ruined by weather, as has my last night here in Omaha at Rosenblatt Stadium. But Aaron, first off, this bracket, we have to start by talking about Arizona State. TFCO, thanks for coming out. Sun Devils, the national number one seed, had not really, again, all year, with the exception of the beginning of the year when UCLA also was starting at 22-0, and they were in this discussion, for almost the whole year, it was Texas, Virginia, Arizona State.
Yeah.
And none of them will win the national title. Texas and Virginia didn't even get here. Arizona State gets here, but then, wow, I mean, on national TV, they just laid a couple of eggs and didn't seem to wear it well either. Just if you weren't named Torres, you didn't represent well for Arizona State this weekend. It's a really shocking performance by Arizona State. Do you have any explanation for it?
No, I don't. I mean, they clearly weren't the same team that they were for the first 62 games this year. You don't go 52-8 coming into the World Series.
Unreal, 52-8.
You know, they hadn't lost back-to-back games all year. And not only did they lose both these games, but they were pretty much dominated in both of them. I mean,
they were dominated.
Clemson had control that first game from start to finish.
That game. It was got sort of hairy, but it was Clemson's game. They were in control, like you said, from the first pitch, basically.
And South Carolina took over in the second inning in that game and scored 8 runs and knocked Merrill Kelly around. And I think you and I both thought that Tim Esme mismanaged that inning for Arizona State. I mean, I don't know how you can possibly leave Merrill Kelly out there and just get hammered. He gave up all 8 of those runs.
I mean how can you not have – you really can't – it's inexcusable. I mean, hey, look, I've never managed a game. But it's inexcusable for me to have an elimination game and a couple batters away. You have the 9-hole hitter, Scott Wingo, hit a double to left field that makes it 3-0, right? Or would that make it 2-0?
It was Wingo. Made it 2-0.
I made it 2-0. So 3 batters later, you've got Jackie Bradley Jr., clearly South Carolina's best hitter, clearly getting into the swing. He's far removed from the Hammond injury now. This guy could be a first-round pick next year, probably will be in a loaded draft. And Jackie Bradley Jr. is coming up in 3 batters, and you don't get a lefty up in an elimination game when you've got Mitchell Lampson, who's only one of the best left-handers in the country?
Yeah.
How do you not get that guy warm? And they didn't have anybody warm for Jackie Bradley Jr., and they couldn't get anybody warm in time, even for Morales.
Right.
That was embarrassing, really, for Arizona State. They just looked shell-shocked, and they frankly just looked unprepared for Omaha.
Yeah.
Again, only the Torres brothers play with intensity. Johnny Rudiger misplayed a ball in left field that inning. Then he overthrew the cutoff man, which cost them a base. They made all kinds of little mistakes. They made big mistakes. Drew Maggi losing a ball on the likes of their night. I mean, Devin Marrero looked good. He had 3 hits today, I believe it was, in the second game, the freshman. But
and when you say lights, he lost the ball in the sun in the morning.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. That's it. He lost the ball in the morning. He just lost a fly ball. He just whiffed on it. I mean, I thought it was an embarrassing performance by Arizona State. And, I mean, embarrassing, and I said they didn't handle it well. Maybe this is just too much of me being a media person talking, but I thought it was weak that in neither game did they bring their starting pitcher to the postgame when both their starting pitchers, Merrill Kelly and Seth Blair, performed extremely poorly. And both of them put their team behind the eight ball.
Yeah. The game in both cases was basically decided, well, those two guys were on the mound. Those two guys need to be out there to answer questions about it.
And, you know, and maybe one of them, maybe not. First game, Seth Blair, maybe I'll give you a pass. Doing it twice talks about, to me, the program. They did not represent themselves well at all this weekend. That's not what I think of when I think of Arizona State baseball. But actually, maybe it is. Maybe a lack of accountability is what I think of when I think of Arizona State baseball. 52-10, tremendous year. They overcame so much with the loss of Spence, firing Pat Murphy, all that stuff. I mean, it's a tremendous year. They have so much they should be proud of. But what a sour taste they leave in our mouths here in Omaha. Pretty bad. It's like no restaurant in Omaha because all the restaurants here are amazing. So it's like a bad trip to Subway like I had this evening at Rosenblatt. It's the Baseball America podcast airing Clemson, South Carolina, Oklahoma. Right now, Clemson's getting 4 innings away from the catbird seat. Does Clemson have what it takes to win that bracket?
I think they do. I mean, I really do. They
have the offense to do it.
That's it. And I just love the way they're swinging the bats right now. And you know, to me, the fact that it's not just a couple of 3-run home runs here and there, the fact that it's a lot of singles, but that means a lot of people are performing. A lot of people are hitting the ball hard. They're squaring it up, and they're just not trying to do too much. They're using the middle of the field, and they're just using all kinds of parts of the field.
They're squaring up a lot of balls, a lot of hard contact. It's fun to say that, but everyone's contributing. Even their freshman, I forget his first name, is it Spencer?
Spencer.
Spencer Kaboom, fun to write, especially fun to tweet. But John Henson, that guy, almost as skinny as the North Carolina forward of the same name. Or almost the same name, but thank you. But he's been impressive. Can Clemson pitch enough, though, Aaron, to win it?
That's the question. I think if they stay in the winner's bracket, that they can. And I think it hurt Clemson quite a bit today that this game was suspended tonight because Scott Wiseman was cruising along. I mean, his pitch count was starting to get up there, but he could have given him another inning or two, I think. You know, that would have, I think, made a big difference because their bullpen, as we know, is an Achilles heel for that team. You know, and I think they needed a little bit more out of Wiseman, and he could have given it to them. Now you got to go to the bullpen a little earlier in the year than you would have hoped. I think that they're still okay because they got some parts to work with there. I think Will Lamb would probably be the guy you'll see.
That makes sense.
Unless they, I mean, because if they win this game, then all of a sudden they don't have to play again until Friday. You know, you can maybe bring Casey Harmon back on 3 days rest. That's what I imagine they would do. Or, you know, you've got other options. But
they're not a team blessed with pitching depth, and yet their pitching depth is going to be taxed even if they go 3-0.
Yeah.
Just because they're having to play those three games potentially over 4 days, no matter what. So, and they don't have a great bullpen. They're going to have to hold that lead without Wiseman and, you know, their two best pitchers are Casey Harmon and Scott Wiseman. Even though Wiseman has the 5+ ERA, now they, you know, they do have the option of bringing Alex Frederick back. But, you know, let's face it, the guy has a 86 mile an hour fastball, and then thankfully for him, he's got a cutter, and he threw three great innings the other day in their first victory. I think they're going to have to lean on him fairly heavily because after that super regional with Alabama, I think we all saw how Tomas Cruz and Kevin Brady, those guys can come with the kerosene out of the bullpen sometimes. South Carolina, the other team that eliminated Arizona State today, Aaron, and then Oklahoma, both those teams, and it seems like Oklahoma is maybe a little bit more offensive, a little bit more of a chance to battle, to use Ray Tanner's word, out of the loser's bracket. Do either of those teams have the – I mean, this is just a complete muddle. I mean, who's the option pitching-wise now for Oklahoma? Because they went to one of their long guys in – well, they burned two guys tonight, in J.R. Robinson and Jack Mayfield.
Jack Mayfield, right.
And obviously Bobby Shore's burned for this game. Where do they go for the rest of this game against Clemson?
Well, they could go with – you know, they could bring Jeremy Urban back, but he pitched –
he pitched a couple innings
the
other night.
On what day was that?
It's pretty
Monday?
Hard. I think that was Sunday or Monday. No, that
Sunday.
Was Sunday.
It was Sunday. Jeez.
It's hard to tell with these rainouts.
They could bring Urban back. I think you'll probably see some Urban. They could go with Zach Neal, who would be the guy that they would need to start the next game, I imagine. They could go with Ryan Duke a little bit, the closer. I mean, yeah, they've got a few options, but
South Carolina also has a lot of options, but there are really more questions with whether they go with their redshirt senior, eighth-year man, Jay Brown, who's been there forever, or they go with a left-hander they're talking about going with.
Tyler Webb is the rumor. There's some speculation out there that maybe they go with the lefty, Tyler Webb, who's got a good arm. You know, they could bring back Blake Cooper on short rest. I mean, he only threw 62, 63 pitches the other day.
They could just Johnny Holstaff.
That's what they've done a lot this year. For the most part, their Sundays have been Johnny Holstaff because they've rarely gotten more than – they've really rarely gotten four full innings out of Jay Brown on Sundays, and he's been generally their Sunday guy. Ever since that Vanderbilt start, that South Carolina loves to say, "Oh, he was great that day." He hasn't really been great since.
Yeah, I think it makes more sense for them to try to Johnny Holstaff and get Blake Cooper saved up and healthy—not healthy, but rested as much as possible.
Yeah,
and then throw him against Clemson if you can beat Oklahoma. Or, of course, Oklahoma could come back on Clemson. We just don't know. That bracket is muddled, but certainly Clemson is advantaged right now. But I think, Aaron, I think we would both agree, right now the two best teams in Omaha look like UCLA and TCU.
I agree 100%.
And to me, one of those two teams is going to win the national championship for the first time.
I think you're probably right, although if TCU has to fight its way back through the loser's bracket and is up against a 3-0 team on either side, maybe that's a little different, but I think even in that case, I mean, I would probably go with TCU.
I think TCU has like 6th, 7th, 8th pitchers who could be better than Clemson's top 2 or 3 guys. I mean, like Leone, their freshman, is nice, he's solid, but I think the plan at Clemson probably was that he would be a midweek guy this year, or a relief guy, and instead he's their third best starter. So,
but that's partly because Jack's kind of riding the hot hand, and
I love that about Jack. And he mentioned it in the pregame or the postgame after their first win. And I just think Clemson's being consistent about that. Frederick's going to be their hot hand of the bullpen until he's not, and then someone else will.
Yeah.
Chris Epps, they're going to ride that hot hand. He's got a .225 average, but boy, that guy has been squaring the ball up here, and he looks good at the top of their lineup. And Kaboom's another example about that.
I'll tell you what, Jack Leggett's won a lot of regionals.
Yeah.
He's been to Omaha, five times now.
Yeah.
I mean, the man can coach. And one thing that every time you see Clemson in the beginning of the year, it's not the same team you see at the end of the year.
Great point.
You know, you see him in the beginning ACC play or whatever when they come through the triangle. He's trying out different combinations. He's trying to find the hot hand. And he will ride the hot hand. He's not afraid to do it. He's not afraid. You know, maybe he's not going to bench Kyle Parker just because he's going through a slump. But he's not afraid to move things around. And, hey, Chris Epps seems to be swinging better. We'll put Chris Epps back in the leadoff spot now. You know,
the thing that really still concerns me about Clemson is the defense. The left side of their infield is just – John Hinson's improved at third base. He's still not great. And right now Brad Miller's a disaster defensively at shortstop. I mean, he just dropped the – throw from the catcher tonight. It was ruled a stolen base, but I mean, he just dropped it. You know, it was kicked away, but he didn't field it cleanly in the first place. That's
why
it was
kicked away. Snow cone catch.
Yeah, that's why it was kicked away. So he's got 30 errors. It could be 31, and that just really worries me. So to me, this has a little bit of a feel of 2002. Clemson won its first two games, but did not have great pitching back then either. They were two starters basically, Matt Henry and Steve Reba. They had some other guys, but Reba was their number one starter, and they put Henry in their, like, moment of truth guy to their bullpen. And South Carolina was in the same bracket. And South Carolina lost its opener that year and won all the way to the championship game. And that's my prediction for the rest of it, is that Clemson will go 2-0, they'll beat Oklahoma. But I think South Carolina's going to battle its way back and battle, as Ray Tanner loves to say. I just think South Carolina's got a little mojo going and could get to the title game, but then lose to a Texas-style offense. They lost to Texas in 2002. They would lose to UCLA this year. So my pre-series pick of Arizona State is already eliminated, but I did pick UCLA to win the other bracket, and I'm clearing space on the John Savage bandwagon, which we constructed back in 1998, and now we're scrambling to get back on it.
1998 or 2008?
No, 1998, back when he was an assistant at Southern California.
Oh, right.
That's when me and Alan Simpson and Jim Cowell started building the John Savage bandwagon. It's been a long time.
It's been a bumpy road, too, I'll tell you.
It has been a bumpy road.
But here we are, and you know, John Savage is, boy, he's doing a great job with that team. I mean, you got to hand it to him. I also have to pick a new bracket two winner. And, I mean, I like Clemson right now. And I like you, I think it's wide open. I don't think South Carolina has enough frontline pitching to make a run back through this thing. And they've really got two starters they can count on.
Right.
The mix and match bullpen routine has worked a lot for them this year. I just don't know if that's going to work here and against this caliber of offenses that they're up against.
That's the thing. The thing that I don't have a ton of faith in my South Carolina pick, and Clemson's offense looks significantly better. The difference, I guess, is that the South Carolina offense on paper this year was not the South Carolina offense right now, with Jackie Bradley Jr. just being really very difficult to pitch to. And the home run he hit tonight, or this afternoon, low and away fastball that he just parked to left center field. I mean, even if the wind doesn't carry it out, he still hit a pitcher's pitch.
Yeah.
And it was going to be a gap or at least two or three bases.
Right.
And he's hitting, he's got, like a 1,300 ops right now in his last 18 games with his 18-game hitting streak with six homers and 20-plus RBIs.
He's an impact player. He's the best player on that side of the bracket. And I mean, maybe the best player here right now.
He's probably the best position player
here. Best position player, right.
The best players here are Garrett Cole, Matt Perk, and Trevor Bauer, probably in that order.
I agree.
And you could maybe flip Perk and Cole. And every time I think about those two guys, Jackie Bradley Jr., Anthony Rendon, Taylor Youngman, I just get excited. I wish we could just start covering Draft 2011 right now. Yeah. I'm just kidding about that. Let's take some time off from Draft 2010.
And I'm going to throw Mike McGee's name out there for best player still alive as well.
Sure.
As far as just I mean, MVP. MVP, great college baseball player, does everything. I mean, he's got to be in that mix as well.
I'm sticking Tyler Holt in his red ass.
Garrett Bichelle. You know, I love Garrett Bichelle. He's got to be in that mix.
And his 80 mullet.
Absolutely.
Between Garrett Bichelle and his 80 mullet, the names Caleb Bushyhead and Spencer Kaboom. It's been a different caliber series, there's no doubt. And we'll stop talking about it before I give Reclent about the last year at Rosenblatt Stadium. So, Aaron, enjoy the rest of your stay here. I've enjoyed mine. We'll come to you next time on another Baseball America podcast, probably at the end of the college series. For Aaron, I'm John. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.